Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month is observed in May. Joining us this morning is Swati Narayan, DIA's Director of AAPI Community Safety and Belonging. Today, we will dive deep into cross-cultural solidarity within the AAPI community. Good morning, Swati.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am good. It's good to be here. It's good to be sitting next to you, to be in the studios. Every time I come here, I get this perspective of the city. For those of you who may not know, you're high up in the building and have this beautiful view sort of the city, and it's always nice to be like on top of things.
Yes.
On Monday, sort of on top of the world.
Yes,
right?
Yes, great way to start the week, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to, you know, this hour with you, learning more about AAPI and the community itself, and learning about the history first, right? Yeah. So do you think we should begin with that?
You know, the history is so diverse. I mean, we can start any which way you want to. But you're right. I mean, May is designated as AAPI, AANHPI Heritage Month. AAPI stands for Asian American Pacific Islander, and recently has broadened to include Native Hawaiian. Mm. So that's AANHPI. And basically, it's an umbrella term. You know, you have people of European descent and Latino, Hispanic descent. And I guess they didn't know where to put the rest of us. So they created this one huge umbrella term. And I say this because we're not a monolith, right? I mean, AANHPI encompasses, I think, over 50, 60 countries, and well over 100 different languages. So you can imagine how different the cultures are among all of those different countries. You know, Native Hawaiian versus like India or Pakistan, you know, like there's a lot of differences in our cultures, in our foods, in our traditions. But then there are also a lot of similarities, you know, in terms of like family dynamics and how, you know, how we view especially that family unit, right? Yeah. And so, and that sort of has been the backbone to how a lot of these communities sort of coalesce. And the histories for each one of those communities are very different.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So we are going to talk about cross-cultural solidarity. So let's begin with what is cross-cultural solidarity?
So solidarity is the act of standing up for, standing in alignment, standing in agreement, standing up for each other, right? Mm-hmm. Cross-cultural, cross-racial solidarity means that regardless of whether you're of a different ethnic origin or a different race or a different culture, you still stand up for another community. You stand alongside another community. You fight for another community, just as if they're your own, because the issues could also affect, because the issues are the same, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so many times, and I know that often we've talked about things like gun violence here, right? And often, you know, we see in many communities this sort of, well, that doesn't happen to us, or it's not in my backyard. And but that's such a narrow way of looking at things, because whatever can affect somebody else or another group can also affect you. You know how they say an injustice somewhere is an injustice everywhere,
correct?
Right? So so it's really important to stand up for one another, because you just don't want to see an injustice perpetrated on any community.
Right.
So that's really sort of what the heart of cross-cultural, cross-racial solidarity is. And it's sort of understanding how, you know, that there's more that we have in common than we have
that is so true.
You know,
yeah, Definitely. Yeah. So can you provide some insight into the diversity of experiences within the AAPI community, especially concerning domestic violence? This is so important because...
Yeah, well, I mean, so you know that BEA is an organization that serves the South Asian community with regard to domestic violence, sexual assault. We provide resources, culturally sensitive, resources. Yes. And that's the key, right? And when we talk about this work, and so when you talk about the diversity of AAPI experiences, mm-hmm. just to be able to have an organization that can focus on, the South Asian community, because the experience of an Anglo person mm-hmm. dealing with domestic violence is going to be very different from, let's say a Pakistani person or an Indian person mm-hmm. experiencing domestic violence. There are cultural taboos, there are nuances, there are language differences. And so to be able to bring that lens to the work so that, so ultimately you want both survivors, both of them to be able to live freely and yeah. with dignity and without fear of abuse. But how you get there is very different, mm-hmm. Just in terms of how you provide the resources, that understanding that, okay, you're living in this family dynamic where everybody is in one household, your mother-in-law, father-in-law, the in-laws, your husband or, spouse, your children, some of the patriarchal norms that yes. may exist, the cultural norms, the expectations that, maybe a South Asian woman or, daughter-in-law, son-in-law would have versus, somebody who's not. And so to bring that lens, when you talk about domestic violence or sexual assault or gender-based violence, mm-hmm. is it's very nuanced but very critical to yeah. helping survivors understand that we are on their side, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it brings me back to our very first year of Chai Time, where we got this call from a lady. She didn't want to, Sasha's nodding her head, she didn't want to be on air, but off air we talked to her, and she had just got out of an abusive relationship. She did not speak English. And she was talking to us in Hindi. And she said, I left him. But now I fear, what am I going to do? Because I don't speak English. I don't have a job. And I have nothing. So where do I go? And we were able to direct her to Daya. So this organization is so important in this community. And for women like her... able to just, I gave her the helpline mm-hmm. and she was able to call and get help. And it just made us realize then that, DIA is so important as an organization for our community, for our South Asian community.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, we know that domestic violence, sexual assault is not specific to any one community.
Correct. Right?
I mean, it transcends, cultures, ethnicities, races. However, how you talk about it, how it's experienced,
yes.
In different communities is very different, right?
Yes.
So to be able to support individuals who are in crisis, with that sort of cultural lens,
mm-hmm.
To let them know that there is help. And that we understand,
yes.
we understand all aspects of it, and that there's no judgment.
Correct.
Is just critically important. It builds trust, right? And at the end of the day, that is how we move forward, is when mm-hmm. we have trust. Again, it goes back to that cross-cultural, cross-racial solidarity. It's that trust mm-hmm. that we have in another community, in each other, that we are going to be here for you.
Yes. Yes.
Regardless. So, yeah. And so we do this for the South Asian community. There are other organizations that do that, you know, specifically for the communities that they serve, and they're vitally important.
Yes, absolutely. Like, we have so many nonprofits that are doing the same kind of work. But, you know, when someone like her is going through that and needs to be comfortable, to be able to talk to someone.
Right.
So it's great to have, you know, someone that she feels that who will understand her better because of her culture and her, you know, ethnic background and all that. Mm-hmm. So that is so important.
Without a doubt. And also what's important is to recognize is that domestic violence isn't just something that happens to women, right? It happens to men as well. And again, to be able to provide not only that nuanced gender lens, but also that cultural lens when we talk about it, right?
Correct.
You know, for so many reasons, there's a stigma, there's shame that a lot of these individuals feel, which they should not. But it's very easy for me to be sitting here and say, no, you shouldn't feel that way when they are experiencing harm and only know the culture that they know.
Yes.
Right? And are operating and living within that.
Yes.
And especially if they've come and haven't lived here for a long time, and they just don't have that community yet, right?
Yeah. That's why we are hopeful that, you know, we continue to normalize these conversations, and we have you all here every month talking about domestic violence, sexual assault, and all different, you know, even teen dating violence, right?
Absolutely.
So it is so important to let people know that, you know, it's not shameful, and, you know, to break that cycle, break the stigma, and to talk about it. And if you see something going on, do something about it. You don't have to physically go there and,
right.
you
say,
know, but you can
something.
Still, yes,
yeah,
stand up.
Absolutely.
So.
That is, it's very important. I have a bag that I carry with me. I didn't bring it today, but it says silence is betrayal. And it's so true. I mean, if you see something, you know something is going on, and you don't say anything, you're just allowing it to continue.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely,
so,
yeah.
And even if you can't do something, just to be able to let, you know, the person who the harm is being perpetrated upon, just to let that person know, I see you. I'm here with you. I am... You know, I support you.
Yeah.
Is so invaluable.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, 6 years ago, you know, where I am personally right now, I know for a fact I have evolved a lot. And if I see something not right, not, you know, I will get myself involved in that in some way or form. Either, you know, share the helpline, or, you know, if I'm asked to advise the person or help the person, I will do it. But I don't know if I would have done that six years ago. And, you know, talking
knowledge
to...
Knowledge is power, right? Knowledge is
that is so true.
It's so great that you have this platform, because you give people this opportunity to learn more so that they're equipped with,
correct.
You know, some sort of background, some wisdom, some knowledge, so that they can, you know, sort of be better ambassadors in
yes.
their own networks and their lives, right?
Yes. And we also need to break that, I don't know, like, you know, a lot of times also in our culture, we think we should have heated arguments, or, you know, to stand up for someone, we should, you know, be up in front and get ready to fight.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's the word. And you know, like, you don't have to.
No.
There are so many other ways that you can help the person. In so many ways,
they're
in
really
positive, good. In positive and impactful ways, I think.
Yeah,
so.
For sure. And it's important to do that. I mean, if you ask me, I feel like as a human being, it's our moral imperative to do that. In whatever way you can. I mean, whatever way feels right to you, but do something.
Yes. Something, right? Don't sit quiet.
Right.
So, Swati, what is?
You've listened to Chai Time.
So what are some of the challenges and barriers that exist in fostering cross-cultural solidarity within the AAPI community?
So there's a lot of, unfortunately, there's a lot of bias, right? Mm. I mean, even within these different communities where we think, I mean, we can even take it to the micro level, right? Like you can take, let's just take the country of India. Mm. And, you know, you have different regions, right? You've got Gujarat, you've got Punjab, you've got UP, Bihar, like all, you know, Tamil Nadu, Kerala, like all these different regions. Sometimes, even among those regions, people sort of are like, well, but that's not our way, that's their way. Or, you know, they, and they start bickering, and they let like these little differences in, you know, sort of maybe regional culture, language, come in the way, and those come in the way of really fostering connection. And all of those things really, at the end of the day, are so arbitrary. they are not somewhere, somebody decided that, okay, we're going to create this, I don't know, whether you want to call it a hierarchy, whether you want to call it structure, whatever it is, it was created by somebody. Since we're all women here, I will say most likely a man. But no, I'm kidding. But,
we want the listeners.
Not really, but
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you know, majority, like according to our stats that that I get for the show, majority are males.
That's wonderful. I mean,
so
that is so great to hear that there's an audience that has an appetite for these conversations, right?
Yes.
And so, and I say it in jest, just because I because I'm the mother of three boys. So whenever I can uplift women, I do. But I say it in jest. Although there is some truth to patriarchy, right? And,
yes.
And what we have gone through, but some of these arbitrary structures or designations are just that, and they kind of stand in the way of people. They focus more on the differences rather than the similarities, and they allow those things to sort of set the tone of how they are going to behave within a community or not. So, like, I'll tell you, when I came, well, I was born in Houston. Excuse me, I was born in Houston, way back in the 60s. And my parents had come here in the early 60s. And so growing up, so when I came, there were 20 Indian families in Houston. That was it. There was one store. It was called J Store. And that was it. And whenever we would go anywhere, and if we saw another Desi,
it's
like, oh my God, there's another one of us, you know? And my parents would go up. I mean, it was like family. They would go up and start making conversation, and, you know, they would be included in the next week's, you know, potluck dinner or, you know, whatever.
Oh, wow.
Because they were so starved for that connection to their homeland. And it was just the general homeland. It didn't matter whether they were from South India or Pakistan or Bangladesh or any of those places. You were from that subcontinent and you were part of the family. So that was in the 70s. Now you see like all of these different communities, like, well, but that's what that community does and we don't do this. And some of those divisions that existed that, like, my parents left that because they didn't want that. Right. Some of those divisions that existed back there are now sort of...
It's here.
Yeah. And it's not just in the Indian community. It's in Asian communities as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you see some of that among, like, the Chinese and the Taiwanese. And so those become barriers, right?
Yeah.
Because you know, we're always stronger together. And when we are living here in this country, and if you're not AANHPI or AAPI, they are all looking at us as one and the same.
Yes.
Right? And so if we have divisions even among us, than those who may perpetrate discrimination against us or bias. They look at us and say, oh, well, see, we've won. Look at them. They can't get along. Or, you know? And yeah. So it's important for us to, you know, put those differences aside. Or, yeah, I mean, you can recognize that, okay, well, this is where we're different. But don't let those differences stand in the way of building community.
Yeah. Yeah, that's perfectly said. You know, like, even when I am, anyways, like, if I go somewhere and someone will come to me and they'll say, oh, are you Filipino? Or, you know, are you Vietnamese? And then I'll say, no, I'm Chinese. And then the conversation just ends. And I'm like, why? And I think to myself, because I don't speak that language, I mean, we could speak in the common language, which is English, right? And we could talk, right? Have a conversation. So I've had that before, too. And of course, on the other hand, I've also had people who will continue the conversation with me and say, okay, you don't look Chinese. So it's like that. I mean, you know, we continue the conversation. So why do we have to, like you said, build those barriers or just shut ourselves down just because we are not the same in, you know, in our culture or
things, or in our language, differences, right?
In our language, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's so true.
Yeah, and funny. If I tell them I speak Hindi, then they give me a big hug.
You must get some really interesting conversations.
I shouldn't say that because I've been keeping this under wraps.
No, but I mean, that's just it. You're a perfect example of, you know, perceptions that people might have.
Yes.
And allowing those perceptions to sort of dictate how you're going to interact with someone,
right,
rather than just looking at that individual and accepting them for who they are. Oh, so, you know, you're Chinese. Tell me a little bit about your experience, you know, and you speak Hindi. How did that happen? You
know? Yeah.
having wonder and curiosity is really so much more beautiful,
yes,
than just saying that, you know, no, I'm not going to have anything to do, or I'm going to halt that conversation and I'm not going to continue.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because sometimes they'll ask me like, oh, you speak Hindi? How is that? Oh yeah, I do get that. You know, you have that accent in you and all that. And some people are very curious. So they'll ask, how did that happen? Were you born in India? Were you brought up in India? So it was like, you know, so the conversation just goes on and becomes very interesting because they're coming, getting to know me now.
Right.
And you know,
and that's your history. Right?
Yes, yes.
And that is what we don't do enough of. It's
right.
Not taught in our schools. I mean, for one thing, you know, our schools are woefully abhorrent when it comes to sharing histories, AANHPI histories, as they really are.
Mm.
They're always taught from an Anglo lens, right? Mm. From the colonist lens.
Yes.
And but that's not our experience. And
right.
and history is, you know how they often say history is told by the victors, right?
Mm.
But true history is how we experienced it.
Yeah.
And those are often lost. And we have to fight for, you know, for those to kind of come to the surface and to share those. Otherwise, generations of people after us,
mm-hmm,
will not know.
Right.
You know, and it can lend itself to erasure, right?
Yeah. So how do we change that then? I mean, you know, as a society itself.
I mean, I think we have to be much more vocal about talking about our histories and trying to shatter the myths that many, you know, many people have. Like, for example, when people say, oh, you know, like if I have, you know, a random Anglo person come up to me and say, oh my God, I love chicken tikka. I'm like, that's great, but you know, chicken tikka is not really an Indian, you know, sort of traditional food. It was colonized and sort of came about when the British came. And so, you know, like stepping up and offering that tidbit of education like you do when you say, well, yeah, I'm Chinese, but I also speak Hindi, and this is how that came about. Those are your histories, and I'm sure, Sasha, you have, you know, your histories as well. And we have to be forthcoming with it. We have to share it with our children.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's so important to share it with our children. We are here. Do we need to take a break?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. She's a pro at it now. She knows all the cues.
All right. I will stop for now.
All right. Thank you, Swati. We're going to go on a short break, and when we return, we will continue our conversation. This is Chai Time 103.5 Hum FM. Welcome back to Chai Time on 103.5 Hum FM. I'm just enjoying this conversation. I feel like it's so relatable.
I mean, but it is,
and in
right?
so many ways, right? So
many ways.
Yeah. So we were talking also off air about how food can get people together.
Absolutely. yesterday, along with BPSOS and Tahare Justice Center, we all are part of the Asian American Foundation City Partners. So we had an event yesterday called Together We Rise. You know, the play on, well, it was, we used bread as the conduit to sort of think about what unites us. So that's where the theme Together We Rise. But it speaks to this sort of cross-cultural, cross-racial solidarity that, you know, we're all in this together. And we had chefs from different regions in Asia. We had a Vietnamese chef, we had a Burmese chef, we had an Indian chef. And they spoke about specific breads and the histories. Because, you know, even when we were talking about histories, right? Recipes are actually sort of the first documented form of history. When you think about food that's made, it's all made based on the flora and the fauna of the region, or what resources are abundant or scarce. And oftentimes it was just because of gender hierarchies, it was women who were tasked with feeding, you know, their families or their villages or their tribes or even armies, right? I mean, you had, you know, nomadic people who would go from one place to another, and they would often have armies because they would, I mean, we're talking way, way back when,
right?
Early civilization. But it was the women who, you know, were in charge of the food, and the food was based on whatever was going on. So, so they were sort of the first, you know, historians or preservers of history. And so every time, like, you're eating something, you're sort of eating histories of generations of people who came before you, right? Because everything that has sort of become indigenous to a particular country had its roots in something that has happened to create that.
Right.
Beautiful way to say that, because now I'm going to get food so different.
I was just about to say the same thing. Yeah, you get, like, you think more about it, right? Yeah, you go into a deeper thought.
Yeah.
And, you know, like with restaurants, right?
Yeah.
Like, maybe you can kind of dive into some of the histories behind some of those foods, and you know, as you share, you know, like the meal or the food, also the histories, you know, like why it is what it is, and what people traditionally, how people traditionally had eaten it, or this was, you know, this was something that was reserved for celebrations, this was something that was reserved for when a child was born, this was something that people usually ate after the passing of a loved one because it provided comfort,
right?
Things like that. I mean, it's just, you know, before the break we were talking about preserving histories.
Yes.
Otherwise there will be this sort of erasure, right, that'll happen. And these are ways that we can all do that. And then being vocal, right, telling the people who know things, having them write them down, having them, you know, write books, blogs, you know, because it's important that we share all of these things. They don't need to be kept. I mean, they're beautiful, and I know many times they're often just sort of kept within families, but, you know, sometimes sharing all of those, you know, gives other people a broader appreciation for where you've come from, you know, historically, generationally, as a community, But then it also resonates with many people, right? Because they're like, I can relate to that.
Yes.
Something like that happened to my grandparents or, you know, my, you know, some relative or friend.
Yeah, yeah. Like my husband's side of the family, you know, they moved from China to India, but and some of like generations, like his ancestors and all, they actually helped build the Gateway of India.
Oh, wow.
And even the railway. So, I mean, so much history is there. You know, you wouldn't think, right? Because in India, it's always, okay, it's only the Indians, but it was also Chinese that. So that is history.
100%, 100%, and that should not be lost.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing here in the U.S., right? We, sorry, my throat is so dry.
That's okay.
We, you know, we often think that our experience is is the here and now.
Mm.
That maybe, you know, I'm here, my parents came here in the 60s, so now I'm here, and then I had my kids. But really, our experience, we are here on the shoulders of people who came before us.
Right.
I mean, the majority of South Asians who came here because of the Black Civil Rights Movement. Like, it would not have happened without their generations of fighting against white supremacy to be recognized. And it wasn't until, you know, the Civil Rights Act was signed, that it opened the door for those of us who were also people of color to be able to come. And again, you know, going back to that cross-racial solidarity, when there's, you know, something egregious that happens in the Black community or the Latin community, we need to stand in solidarity with them as well. You know, not just because of what they have done has enabled us to be here, but also because an injustice upon any community of color is an injustice upon all of us, right?
Yeah.
And you know, that whole sort of model minority that many Desis like to claim is just baked in racism. It was one of the ways white supremacy tried to pit us against the African American community, and we have to let go of that and recognize that, you know, we are here because of them. No matter, I'm not saying that it was easy. I'm not saying that there wasn't hard work. I'm not saying that didn't happen. All of those things happened, but the gateway to be able to come here was because of what they did, so that the U.S. government would recognize that people of color had a right to freedom here as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you were talking about your husband's family. I don't know how many people realize that, like, for the South Asian community, we actually can trace our roots back all the way to the 1700s and 1800s in the U.S.
Wow.
Again, the British had colonized India, and the British had colonized the U.S., and so they had brought over quite a few indentured servants. You know, many of them were Punjabi. They came, and they were along the West Coast. So even now, if you go, you'll see Sikh farmers who have been there for 3 or 4 generations, you know, along the West Coast. In 1907, there was a huge uprising in Bellingham, Washington, that, you know, the white people there were very concerned because there were, I think there were some, there were hundreds of South Asian workers who wanted a better life for themselves, and they had come here, and they came because they knew of these other Punjabi, you know, people who had come here with the British, and they said, well, the land looks like this, and there's opportunity, and so they came over, and white people, much like with the Chinese, when they came over here to build, even before the railroads, but when they had come over here, you know, the Europeans, the white people who were here, would not allow them to have the same rights. They would not allow them, they would not allow them to have breaks while they were working. They weren't even able to speak against white people. I mean, that was the law of the land back then. So there was a huge uprising in 1907 where, you know, scores of South Asians were beaten and driven out of of Bellingham. And and then on the East Coast, you know, I brought this book here because it's one I want to read. It's called Bengali Harlem. And it's the story of these Muslim Bengali women who came over through Ellis Island in the early 1800s. And they settled with the Creole and the Puerto Rican people who were living there at that time, because that's where they found solidarity. That's where they found, you know, because they were also people of color. And so they felt like, okay, I can build community with them. If you look at Kamala Harris's story, and that's 60s, that's much more recent compared to these histories. But even, you know, Kamala Harris's mom was Indian and her father was black. And when they her parents got divorced, and her mom was raising Kamala and her sister, and she chose to raise them in the black community because that's where she found more community, more support, as opposed to like within the Indian community, even though she herself was Indian.
Wow.
So it's really interesting.
Yeah.
So, so I mean, like Kamala Harris, I mean, she embraces both sides of her heritage, but she definitely identifies with being, I mean, she went to an HBCU.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Wow.
So that's, you know, like just understanding that our histories matter. Our histories are so important. You can take these conversations up with your school boards. You can take them up with your state board of education. And I know in California, that was a very, very fraught battle to, you know, to ensure that the histories of South Asian were told through a South Asian lens, as opposed to a, you know, a white lens. And it's the same. It's the same when you look at slavery, right?
Correct.
I mean, everything that we've read in books has been the way white people perceive slavery, and that is not the experience at all of Black Americans who are still dealing with the repercussions of slavery today.
Absolutely. You know, going back to history and educating, you know, our community, I know there are many within the South Asian communities, they have classes or schools, right? Or, you know, the different communities they have for kids where they teach them academic, like math or whatever, right? But why can't this be part of that as well? Like I'm saying, I'm just thinking out loud, but history, like our history, to preserve it. I know you're saying go to like our school boards, and there might be a lot of barriers or hurdles
that
to go through, but there are many communities that after school activities they have, or you know, they have not only activities such as sports, but they also focus a lot of the academics, but it's only math, science, things like that. But what about history? Why, you know, how can we, do you think like we should have that included too in the curriculum? Or
I mean, for sure, without a doubt. I mean, history should, you know, the thing is, history doesn't define us, but it explains where we are today, and it sort of informs what we should and shouldn't do going forward.
And we don't want it to get lost.
We don't want it to get lost.
So we,
but
you know.
But the other thing is, you know, when you have some of these after-school programs where, you know, they're talking, you're only reaching a select few students. Many of them are students of privilege, right? If their parents can pay for these after-school programs where, they get extra tutorials or whatever, and many of them might be just part of what the school offers until late pickup and things like that. But if it's what the school offers, then you still have to go through, you know, the state board, right? And if these are additional programs or people are paying for them,
yes,
then obviously you have a little bit more flexibility. But then again, it's falling on the ears, and it's important.
Yes.
But it's falling on the ears of children who already have privilege. And we need these histories to be shared among everyone, right? We need the young black girl who lives in inner city Houston to know about our experiences just as much as we need to know about her ancestors' experiences. And so that's why, you know, when it's done in a much more equitable and scalable way, they aren't lost, right? And so that's, you know, that's sort of my take on it. Anything is better than nothing.
Right.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. But we really need to ensure that the masses, and there's a big push by a lot of our state boards they're pushing back against accurate history being shared, whether it's South Asian, whether it's AAPI, whether it's the black experience, whether it's the Latino, the Mexican, the Spanish experience. There is a big push against it, and that's a whole other conversation. But it's a very controversial sort of it shouldn't be controversial.
Yes.
But it is.
Yeah.
Much like everything else in politics.
I'm so glad that, you know, I mean, blessed are the kids who have grandparents or great-grandparents, because they learn the history, the culture, the traditions, and a lot more from the grandparents, great-grandparents, because I know I learned a lot through my grandparents and even my great-grandmother. So,
but what's important in that is, yes, you learn those histories.
Yeah.
But what you don't want to learn are the biases.
Correct.
That come from that.
Yes.
And that is why learning other histories,
yes,
is really important, so that you can identify,
right,
where there is a bias. Otherwise, you're just going to be sort of repeating the same thing.
Correct, yeah. And, you know, I do have these conversations in the restaurant. That's why I'm so happy that I have a restaurant where I have from all communities,
right,
that come in, and conversations just flow from one topic to the other, and it's such an eye opener for me in so many ways. You know, when you're talking about Black history and you know, all these things, I have had those conversations with women who, you know, who have come to the restaurant and talk about it and been so passionate about it too. So it's such an eye opener for me too.
I mean, it is, it's intertwined in everything, right?
Correct.
I mean, coming back to, like, whether it's domestic violence or whether it is how somebody's experience at school, you know, at the elementary school level or even at the collegiate level, hiring practices.
Yeah.
All of these things are intertwined in how much we know about each other, how open-minded we are in understanding. And so the more history we know, the more open-minded we can be. But if we just stay very siloed in, you know, okay, this is how this community did it, this is how we do it, this is how we do it, this is how we do it, we're just going to be perpetuating that same thing. And, you know, there's a way to be open-minded without still losing your cultural identity.
Yeah. And I think Daya is doing a great job with it. You know, like, y'all are really, like, having these conversations. It's not just about, yes, there's domestic violence and there's sexual assault and all, but diversifying into different topics as well, because that, at the end, all come together, right?
It all comes together, and it all, look, at the end of the day, domestic violence, gender-based violence, the root cause of it is bias. It's hate. And the root cause of bias and hate is ignorance. simply, that is it. That is it. It is ignorance. How people act on it, why they act on it, that all is very layered, but the root is ignorance. So if you're able to sort of dispel some of that ignorance, with open-minded conversations, with bridging an understanding, some of those anger management issues may never even come up.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's sort of how it's all very intertwined and
this is so powerful.
It is.
I love it.
I love this work. I love delving deeper.
Yes.
I love having these conversations. And it's also so simplistic too, right?
Right.
It's so we don't have to be this hurtful to each other.
Correct.
There's no need for it, you know?
Yeah.
I was watching part of this movie yesterday called Origin. It's based on Isabel Wilkerson's book, Caste. But in there is, she's a black woman, and there's this one scene where it's a plumbing scene, and there's like a leak in her basement or something, so she calls a plumber, and the plumber's in there. But the plumber's wearing this cap that references a former president who wasn't always kind to black people. And so she's like thinking, oh no, this is going to be, there's going to be like, he's not going to want to help me. And initially he didn't.
Okay.
But she never talked about the politics. She started saying, well, my mom just died. And because her mom had just died. And then she said, what about your mom? And then he said, my mom died, whatever age. And then she goes, but you still have your dad, right? And then he said, yeah, but my dad is, 78. And she goes, well, at least you still have him. He goes, he's a monster. But the point is, she didn't delve on the politics.
Yes.
She tried to find that connection.
Yes.
With family or whatever it took. And in the end, he fixed. You could see that he didn't want to be there. She was nervous about him being there. But they ended up having this conversation, and he fixed the issue.
Yeah. Open conversations.
Which
having that connection.
Here. Yeah. Absolutely. But again, that's that solidarity, we're going to find that common ground.
Yes.
So that we can be there for each other. That humanity that we all have.
Right. Yeah. Wow, I have so many questions. She's like, you don't have much time, girl. That's okay.
You think 2 hours?
We should, right? Okay, so let's see what I can pick from here. Swati, can you share examples of successful collaborative efforts between AAPI organizations to support survivors of domestic violence?
You can just look at us. I was talking to you about the Asian American Foundation City Partners. So we work with BPSOS, which is Boat People SOS. It's a community organization that serves the Vietnamese and Cambodian populations here. And then the Tahare Justice Center, and they provide legal resources to women and children escaping gender-based violence. The majority of their the clients they serve are Spanish-speaking.
Okay.
So here we are, these three different organizations serving multiple different communities, but we come together and we help each other with resources. So, Tahare might help us with legal resources if we need something. BPSOS will help us, with maybe with transportation or other things. We can help with, culturally competent training. And the three of us work together. That event that I was talking to you about yesterday, it was the three organizations.
Oh.
And I'll tell you, the collaboration has been so successful that the Asian American Foundation is featuring us on a film that's going to be on Amazon.
Wow.
So we recognize that we all have our strengths when it comes to working with specific communities, but some of those same strengths we can learn from and use to help, you know, the communities that we serve. And it's just been such a beautiful, beautiful partnership.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear more about all other events that you have coming up too.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's so exciting. You'll always have something new, something interesting going on, and getting the community together.
We love building community. We want community to come, participate, think outside the box.
Yes.
Let them know that we're here to support them.
Yeah, that's just great.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Swati, for coming. I know.
Thank you for having. Thank you always for this platform that you provide, Thea, and, you know, for having us and hosting us. It means a lot to us.
Thank you. Thank you, Swati. I learned a lot today from, you know, even this whole hour has just been a learning thing for me, a whole learning hour for me. And I think I really thank you for that.
Oh, there's no thank you. I mean, every time I'm here, I learn from you all. I'm dying to hear more about your Chinese, experience.
You know? Yeah, you have to come to the restaurant for that.
Okay.
Get some food, too.
All right.
We'll do.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's so interesting, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to Chai Time. We shall see you next week, same time, same place. Signing off, Chai Time, 103.5 Hum FM.